server has been down because of all of you listening. So most of what we're talking about in this class is pretty old stuff. It's all done before the Revolutionary War. The last mod of the course was stuff that was done around the time of the Civil War. Surprisingly, the vectors is actually the most recent part. So it may seem surprising that vectors came so late to physics. And one name that's associated with this is a name that you should all know, right? Gibbs, right? From Gibbs Free Energy. So he is the Yale physicist who, in this country, was working to figure out how to use vectors. And the basic idea of vectors is, I think, surprisingly simple. So it seems surprising that it took this long to introduce them. And it was known actually to Galileo, so back 400 years. And the idea is that what goes on in this direction has nothing to do with what's going on that direction. So we can treat all of those directions as separate. But it's handy to be able to package them together into one thing in order to deal with them. So vectors is just a way of packaging together the x and y coordinates into one thing so you can talk about it. So there's a kind of standard example of this that actually Galileo talks about. And that is that if you take a gun perfectly horizontal and shoot it, and at the same time drop a bullet, then those bullets will hit the ground at the same time. Every second, every millisecond, the altitude of the fired bullet and the drop bullet should be the same. Because what's going on in this direction has nothing to do with what's going on in that direction. They can be handled totally separately. So you might know that these days they don't allow instructors to carry guns. But believe it or not, back in my physics class, we did shoot guns in physics class, right? Shooting grizzlies and things like that. So I can't use a real gun. I've got this kind of fakey spring-powered gun. And it's perfectly designed to drop something. So I can put this ball here. And when I fire it, it's going to drop it at the same second that it hits it. And supposedly, these things are going to hit the ground, actually this tabletop, at exactly the same time. Don't want them to hit my calculator. Of course, it's a very powerful gun, so it's probably going to blast through that wall. You can see the hole left by the previous class. Okay, if you pick the one without the hole, it takes a while to spin it before you find the hole. Okay, you do have to shoot the gun level. So of course, if it doesn't work, I'll blame it on the levelness of it. Oh, looks level. Right, so just one click, right? They hit the ground at the same time, even though one was powerfully fired to this side. Okay, so it turns out that we really can treat the what's going on in the x direction and the y direction is totally separate, but it's helpful to be able to package them into one thing. So we're going to package vectors into x and y directions. And typically what we're going to denote vectors by is things with little arrows on top. If you look in your book, they'll typically use bold and one of these little arrows on top, but it's hard to do bold on the blackboard, so I'll just usually put the little arrow on top.
Just the one-headed arrow?
I think in the book they're going to use two, but that would take extra work, so I'll just use one. And can do it as just one keystroke then. Say again?
I said I'm just used to chemistry where it makes a difference.
Who does it? Oh. That's new to me. I don't.
Electrons.
Yeah, you'll have to tell me more. I can't see why it should. But so if we have, say, position vectors. So let's say this particle is, going on some roller coaster. And this is the origin. So I can have a vector that is pointing to where the particle is now, where the particle is now, where the particle is now. I can have all of those sorts of vectors, which are, of course, made up out of an x component and a y component. And for any vector, if I want to figure out what the x and y components are, I can, of course, just use trigonometry. So if the length of this vector, and we usually denote the length of vectors like this. So when I have something without an arrow on it, and it's not just me forgetting to put the arrow on it, it means it's the length of that vector, then it's just polar coordinates, right? So this x is a side that is adjacent to this angle theta, so x should be equal to the cosine of theta times r. And this y value is a side that's opposite this angle theta, so it should just be r sine theta. And remember, I advertised that at least my calculator has a nice polar to rectangular converter, that I don't actually have to enter those things in. I can just kind of push a button, and it'll automatically convert polar to rectangular and vice versa. So if we're going to have vectors, we want to be able to treat them like we do normal numbers. We want to be able to add and subtract and multiply them and all the usual sorts of things. And what vector addition means is like walking, right? So if I walk in a particular direction that represents a vector, if after I've completed that walk I go in a different direction, what we mean by adding those things up is the net result of that process. So if I have a vector A and a vector B, and I want to know what the sum is, all I need to do is to put them tip to tail. And then the resultant vector is going to go from the tail of the first to the tip of the second. Incidentally, this is another shorthand for lazy instructors. So by writing just one arrow, I save myself the incredible pain of drawing two arrows. I mean them to be exactly the same thing. So if we add vectors, how about subtracting vectors? Well, one way you could subtract vectors, if you think about it, would be by inverting this vector. So if I wanted A minus B, I could take this vector and invert it. So that would be the minus B vector. And then I could just add A and minus B. And that works, but it's a little bit unnecessarily difficult, I would say. Oops, that arrow is going the wrong way. Right, it goes from the that goes that way, doesn't it? A plus minus B. No, it goes the other way. Okay, yes, okay, I'm happy. So there's another way of adding vectors, which is, I think, a little bit easier to work with, and that is to take the vector that you want to subtract and move it so that its tail matches the tail of the other vector. So this is the same vector B. I've just moved it over so that its tail is at the same spot as A. And then the subtraction, A minus B, is the vector that goes from tip to tip. Right, so from the tip of B to the tip of A. Okay, so for example, this vector here, it's going from the tip of R1 to the tip of R2. So this vector is R2 minus R1. And this vector here, this is R3 minus R2. So these extra displacements we can write as deltas, right? They're differences of two r positions. Right? Typically final minus initial. So once we've got delta r's, we can make things like average velocities That's going to be the change in position vector divided by the change in time. So this average velocity vector is going to be that distance divided by whatever time change occurred. Now, you know, we're not super interested in average velocities. We're usually interested in instantaneous velocities. And the plan is the same. We're going to bring the two points very close together. And, of course, that's going to make the change very, very small, but it's going to be divided by something that's very small, and it's going to end up, so if I start bringing this point closer and closer and closer to number 2, then that change is this little bit, and when I divide by the big delta t, I get an instantaneous velocity that's kind of like that. And I hope you can see that we're guaranteed that the instantaneous velocity is going to be tangent to the curve. Right? If I bring together two points, the change is going to be very close to in the same direction as the curve was at that point. Okay, so once we had velocities, the next thing to do was to talk about accelerations. So just as before, I can talk about the average acceleration, in which I take two separate velocity vectors and divide them by t. So if you think about something moving in a circle, for example, so here's the path that something's moving in. So at this point, it has a velocity vector kind of like that, tangent to the curve. And this one has a velocity vector that's kind of like that. The change in velocity, remember, I would do that by moving the two velocity vectors to a common point, say that one. And then the change in the velocity vector, so this was point 1 and this was point 2. The change in the velocity vector would be that quantity. So this is kind of different, right? So we think about accelerations as being in the same directions as speeds. That's certainly the way it is for motion in one dimension. But here you have a case where the change in velocity is not in the direction of the speed. It's in a perpendicular direction. So we can have accelerations and velocities that are all in the same direction. You know, for example, if a car was moving this fast and then later it's moving that fast, the change in the velocity is clearly in that direction, and so the acceleration will be in that direction. So the acceleration vector can have any old orientation to the velocity vector. It's not necessarily in the same direction as the velocity vector. Okay, questions? Well, let's take a look at some eye quizzes with your cards. So let's say I have two vectors, P and Q, and they both have the same length. And can think about the possible values for the length of the sum of those two vectors. Could it be 0? Could it be 5? Could it be 10? How many of these things are possible values for the sum of two vectors? It's pretty much, I think it's majority C, but it's pretty much everything. Well, so let's see. So if I have two vectors that have length 5 and they're in the same direction, then certainly they could add up to 10. If I have two vectors that are in opposite directions, they can certainly add up to 0. And if you think about something like an equilateral triangle, they can certainly add up to what they had originally. So if you think about it, they could add up to everything, anything, between 0 and 10, including 5. How about the difference of two vectors? How many of those different quantities could you get if you subtracted those two vectors? Not fooling many people yet. Not sure I fooled anybody yet. Some non-voters. Are you hiding that behind somebody's head? It's majority D. That's what I see. And that's right. Right? Because if I had two vectors that were the same and I subtracted them, I'd get 0. If I had two vectors that were opposite and I subtracted them, I could get 10. And I could still have this sort of funny equilateral triangle. I could get every possibility by subtracting them as I could get by adding them, just depending upon the orientation. Okay, so I've got a vector, which like most of our vectors are going to be in the xy plane. For what orientation will both components of the vector be negative?
B.
Yeah, I think I like B. That's what people are voting for. So if we think about the usual xy plane, a vector in what's called the first quadrant, angles between 0 and 90 degrees, they'd both be positive. Between 180 degrees and 90 degrees, the x component would be negative. But here in the what's called the third quadrant, between 180 degrees and 270 degrees, that's where they'd both be negative. Okay, so this is about a distinction which we're not going to have a whole lot of use for, but we might as well make it at least once. So an ant walks around the perimeter of a 1 by 2 meter table. What's its displacement? What's the distance that it traveled? Not fooling anybody that I see. So we use this word displacement to mean the magnitude of the net spot that it's moved, if we're being careful. So the displacement, it started at a spot and it ended up at the same spot, so the difference vector is 0, and it had 0 displacement, as opposed to the distance that it traveled, it went all the way around this perimeter. And well, I probably won't be all that careful about always using the word displacement as opposed to distance, but technically speaking, that's what we mean as this distinction. So distance is the actual, so if you've gone around in a circle, you've certainly taken many steps, you've traveled some distance, but your displacement can still be 0 as a result. Here's, I don't know, kind of a tricky-ish question. So typically what we're going to have, of course, is coordinate systems that are normal. Here what I've done is I've set up a coordinate system which is kind of weird, and I've got a vector g, and I'm trying to figure out what the x component is of it. So which of those formulas accurately describe the x component of this g vector? Hmm. I like some of the answers. So questions like this, it's kind of important to remember that you don't have to know the right answer, you just have to be able to eliminate three of the answers. And often what's smart to do is to think about very simple cases and see what the formulas say in those very simple cases, to look at the extreme cases. So if theta is equal to zero, what would be the x component of gravity? Maybe it's not such a simple case. Yeah, right? So if theta is zero, then this is the situation, and g is 100% on the y-axis. So which one of these formula is going to give us zero if I plug in theta equals zero? You can just crank them out on your calculator. You might know that the cosine of zero is one, the sine of zero is zero, that's looking good. The sine of 90 degrees is one, not so good. The cosine of 180 degrees is minus one. So the only formula that works in that simple case is B. So another, simple case, not simple case, is if this angle were 90 degrees, right? So if that angle were 90 degrees, then the situation would be like this, right? X would be down. Under those circumstances, G would all be on the x-axis. And under those circumstances, the cosine of 90 degrees is zero, but the sine of 90 degrees is one, so it's going to work.
So what was the reason for finding out that G, or plugging in zero for cosine? What?
So it's just a simple way of solving these sorts of problems. So we can, and we will eventually when we do this problem, work out the geometry that comes to that conclusion. But, typically you're only going to have a minute to answer a multiple choice question. So often a test-taking trick to answer these sorts of questions is to not look at the general case that might be presented in the problem, but to look at extreme cases of the general case that might be immediately obvious and might allow you, the equation has to work under all those cases, so it might allow you to eliminate lots of the possibilities. Okay, so those are kind of sort of multiple choice questions that are going to be on exams. You've seen an example of the problem type questions that are on exams. They're typically the same sort of problems that we've got in the book, and I've got a kind of a lineup of problems there. So I was trying an experiment. Usually I've been Xeroxing the problems in the book, and I was going to try and not do it and see how that worked. I would say it didn't work all that well for the previous class, but You can tell me whether I can save the plastic trees or not by not bothering to reproduce the questions. Okay, so problem 11. So problem 11 deals with a vector that has a length of 35 units and an angle of 325 degrees, and we're supposed to figure out the x and y coordinates. So here's the picture. Here's our x and y coordinates, and this vector is 325 degrees. And it has a length that is 35. And we're supposed to figure out the x and y components of that vector. So first of all, once you've made that drawing, I hope it's clear that the x component is going to be positive and the y component is going to be negative. And one way of working this problem is to put in those signs by hand and just deal with the triangle. So if this is 325 degrees, this angle here is going to be minus 35 degrees. So I could say, for example, that this side is going to be, just as a normal triangle, it's going to be 35, that's the magnitude of it, times the cosine, since it's an adjacent sine, of 35 degrees. And I could say that this side here, just as a side of a triangle, has to be 35 times the sine of 35. But because it's pointing in the negative direction, it has to be minus 35 times the sine of 35. So I can put in the sines by hand if I want. On the other hand, the formulas work no matter what that angle is. So it is always the case that x is equal to r times the cosine of theta and y is equal to r times the sine of theta without bothering to put in any sines yourself. So y, for example, is exactly equal to 35 times the sine of 325 degrees. And x is exactly equal to 35 times the cosine of 325 degrees. Or I could put in minus 35 degrees for both of those quantities. All of those methods will give me the same answer. Right? But for this particular case, I had to put in that sign by hand, recognizing from the picture which way it worked. I want to advertise that you've got calculators that I bet can do this thing automatically. And I can't tell you how to run your calculator, because lots of you have different calculators, but I can tell you that I just today put in to Google YouTube TI-84 polar direct angular conversion, and there was a nice video on exactly how to do it on a TI-84. So I suspect that a little bit of Googling can find it.
Sorry, what does that mean, polar rect? Like, what does that option do?
So, for polar coordinates, we're describing a location by an angle and a distance. So, kind of think of radar, right? So, you know that the plane is at that angle that far away. Rectangular is referring to the x and y coordinates of them. And if you know one set, you know the other set. And your calculator can actually do that sort of conversion. So for example, if I plug into my calculator the angle of 325 and the magnitude of 35, I learn that the x component here is 28.67. I could get the right number of sig figs, but I'm not going to. And the y component is basically minus 20. And I should get that same answer no matter how I work that problem. But your calculator can do a fair amount of work for itself if you ask it to. Okay, so let's take a look at 14. So 14 deals with adding vector displacements. A lot of these problems deal with walking because we don't know a lot of different vectors yet. So displacement is just kind of the easiest example of a vector. So in this particular problem, we have a hiker that's going lots of different directions, and they tell us the direction and the magnitude, and we're supposed to figure out, you know, where that person is at the end of this process. So we're going to go north 75 meters, and then we're going to go east 250 meters. And then there's kind of a funny way of describing this angle. We're going to go north of east. So we're going to go 30 degrees north of east. So east would be this way, and we're going to go 30 degrees up from that direction. And we're going to go that 125 meters. And then we're going to go due south 150 meters. And the question is, where did we end up? What is this vector that is the sum of all of those displacements? Well, let's give these guys names, 1, 2, 3, and 4. So vector number 1 has nothing in the x direction, and it's got 75 in the y direction. Vector number 2 is all in the x direction, and nothing in the y direction. Let's hold off on number 3 for a second. Number 4 is all in the minus y direction. And to figure out the net displacement, all I need to do is to add up all of those quantities. And that will give me the x and y coordinates of the result. So I could, again, I could display this as R1 plus R2 plus R3 plus R4, for example, as being the sum of those vectors. And of course, all I'm doing is adding up the x components and adding up the y components and putting them together and calling it a vector. It's just a way of dealing with the x and y coordinates all at once. So for this guy here, if I wanted to, I could see that the x side is the side adjacent. So it's going to be 125 times the cosine of 30 degrees. The y side is the side opposite. So it's going to be 125 times the sine of 30 degrees. Works. Or I can just push the magic button on my calculator, which is what I'm going to do. So I've got 30 degrees and 125. And what I learn is the x component is 108.25, and the y component is 62.5. So the total displacement, all I need to do is to add these guys all up. 0 and 0 are easy to add. These guys I can add in my head, right? 358.25. In the y direction, I've got my 62.5 minus 150 plus 75. That's the same thing as minus 75. And it's going to be minus 12.5. Okay, well, what is this distance and what is this angle? Well, the distance I can calculate, I hope it's clear, by using Pythagoras. Right, that's going to be the 358.25 squared plus the 12.5 squared. The angle, I think it pays to draw the vector, right? So it's very strongly to the east, and it's a little bit to the south. So I can find that angle as a positive angle as the inverse tangent of 12.5 divided by 358.25. And I can say that it's that small angle south of due east. Or I can just plug these numbers into my calculator and push the magic button, and it'll automatically give me the angle. It'll be a negative angle and the magnitude that's involved. So I've got the minus 12.5 and the 358.25. And I can tell you that the magnitude is 358.47, and the angle is pretty much minus 2 degrees. So kind of a word to the wise, if you just write down an angle on your exam, I will have to assume that it's the standard angle, that it's measured counterclockwise from the x-axis, in which case 2 would be the wrong answer. So I think it always pays to draw a picture, show me the angle that you're calculating, and then, you know, report what the number is. Typically a positive number, because no one except calculators likes negative angles. Okay, so add up the components in order to get the x and y locations of this net displacement. And your calculators can do a lot of that work for you. So 16, 18, and 20, a bunch of even-numbered problems. So 16 is pretty much the same as what we did. 18 isn't that much different, but I like it better. So let's do 18. So 18 deals with some airplane flights between Dallas and Atlanta and Chicago. So here's Dallas, here's Atlanta, and here's Chicago. And it says that from Dallas to Atlanta is 730 miles at an angle of 5 degrees. And Atlanta to Chicago is 560 miles. And they've given us the angle a little bit funny way. They've given us this angle, the angle from north, and it's 21 degrees. And we're supposed to figure out what the net displacement is, what the sum of those two vectors are. So it's pretty much the same as the other way. We need to figure the x and y components of these vectors and then just add them up. So let me call, so this is the Dallas to Atlanta vector. I could calculate it if I wanted to as an easterly x direction that is 730 miles times the cosine of 5 degrees. And a northerly direction that is 730 miles times the sine of 5 degrees. Now, if I use the triangle that they're suggesting, this triangle, then I have my Atlanta to Chicago vector. Well, this piece, which is the x piece, I can see is negative, and I can see that it's a side that's opposite this 21 degrees. So it's going to be minus 560 miles times the sine of 21 degrees. The y component is adjacent to that angle, and it's positive. It's going to be 560 times the cosine of 21 degrees. And that should all look a little bit funny to you. Usually x's have to do with cosines, and y's have to do with sines, but they've given us a funny angle, so things have been reversed. Instead, I could use the standard angle, which is 90 plus 21 degrees, which is 111 degrees, and I could, you know, use the magic button on my calculator. So this one here is 5 degrees at 730 miles. And it turns out, you should be able to do it either way, it's 727.2 and it's 63.6. And this other vector is 111 degrees at 560 miles and it is minus 200.7 miles and 528.8 miles. And I just need to add those up to get the total displacement. And that total displacement is 526.5 and 586.4. If I want the magnitude and angle, right, so this is a triangle that is 526 by 586. If I want this angle theta, I could just calculate that angle is the inverse tangent of the y component divided by the x component. Of course, I could also just hit the magic button on my calculator. I am trying to advertise that today. And what I find is that the length of this vector is 788 miles, and the angle is 41.9. I'm worried about the magic button on my calculator. That can't be right. The magic button on your calculator is only as smart as you are. Say again?
I got R as 788.
Yeah, so I think I believe the 788, the 41 is what I'm skeptical of. I'm thinking that it might be 90 minus 41.9.
Yeah, I got
Yeah, so I think I pushed the non-magic button on my calculator. Yeah, so when I do it right, I do get the 40.1 degrees, 48.1 degrees. So that's the problem with doing things on your calculator, that you can make mistakes. So how did I figure out I made a mistake? Well, if this was a 45 degree triangle, then these two things should be the same. But our y is bigger than our x, so it should have been more than 45 degrees. And I had a number that was less than 45 degrees, so I didn't like that. Questions? So we got 20 and 21 left. So let's take a look at 20. One of the things I like about 20 is that all these problems have had to do with displacements, distances, and that's because that's all we've gotten to so far. But in fact, most of the vector addition we're going to be doing in this class won't involve displacements. It'll involve other vectors. And in particular, it'll involve forces. So we don't know anything about forces yet, except that they're vectors and we can add them up. And that's what this problem is asking us to do. It's telling us what these vectors are, they're forces, and asking us to add them up. So kind of the only new aspect of this problem is they've given us the angles in kind of funny ways. So one vector is 80 newtons at an angle of 75 degrees. And the other vector is 120 newtons at 60 degrees. And we don't need to know anything about newtons in order to do this calculation. All we need to do is to treat them as vectors and add them up. So if I, let me call them A and B. If I want to, I can look at this as a triangle, and I can say that this adjacent side has to be the length times the cosine of 60 degrees. And this opposite side has to be 120 times the sine of 60 degrees. Or you know what I'm going to say? You can push the magic button on your calculator and get the answer, if you push the right buttons, which I do some fraction of the time. And what I get is 60 and 103.9. Now, if I try and use my magic button on this other angle, I have to have things in the standard angle. I have to have that angle, not the 75. That angle is 105 degrees. But if I don't want to use the magic button, I see that this is a triangle, and I see that this thing as a side is opposite the 75 degrees, so this y value is going to be the 80 newtons times the sine of 75 degrees. This side I can certainly calculate as an adjacent to the 75 degrees, so it's going to be 80 times the cosine of 75 degrees, but by hand I have to realize that it's going in the minus x direction, so I need to put in that minus sign myself. Okay, so magic button time, I've got 105, because calculators only know angles from the positive x direction, and 80, and what I get is minus 20.7 and 77.3, basically. And of course, all I need to do is to add these things up. And I don't believe what my calculator told me. So I've got 60 and 20.7 subtracted. So this is going to be 39.3. And the other one is 103.9 and 77.3. 181.2. So part of this problem, as it's written in the book, asks you what force would cancel those out. And that would, of course, be the opposite of what's there. Okay, so this is where the trig that we did in chapter 1 is going to be frequently used, right? We're going to need to break vectors up into their component parts. The book kind of doesn't use this ordered pair notation, but I sure find it a lot better than any other possibility. So I recommend it to you. All that ordered pair is doing is listing in one thing what the x and y components are of the vector. There's another notation which is maybe worth talking about a little bit. No, it's not. It's not worth talking a little bit. It's just confusing. So I've got one more problem in 5 minutes. So we could do 21, excuse me. Yeah. So they're all the same at this point, I think. Questions? Any questions about this vector process?
What do I Google to get the magic button again? Polar to.
Yeah. So what I. So it's going to be different for all your calculators. So let me kind of give you what I did and what I think will help. So into Google, I put YouTube. And then I decided to test out a Texas Instrument 84. And then I put rectangular to polar conversion. And this wasn't quite as simple on an 84 as it was on this one. But there was a function that was called something like P arrow R. And then you put in the angles there, and you hit it, and you got the X component immediately.
Hey, what's this?
Yeah. So I'm sure all your I'm reasonably sure that all of your calculators can do this, and I'm reasonably sure that you either don't have your manual with you or you've lost it. But it's online, right? You can Google it. And if you have trouble, stop by my office and prove me wrong. Prove that it's impossible to find how to do polar to rectangular conversion on your calculator. Sure. Yeah, there is just one button I have to push.
Okay, I have a question with this one. If it says right here, if it starts from rest, mm-hmm. that's like saying the initial velocity is zero.
Yes.
Okay, and then it said, I believe they were asking for, they were a speed. Average speed was my problem that I had for the first one. You don't take acceleration times time
Correct, yeah. That you don't.
Okay. So, and that's what I was thinking you did, because one of the equations was kind of set up that way.
So if you started as a baby at zero height,
right,
and 10 years later you're 5 feet tall, what was your average height?
It doesn't come from your end, and it's not that easy, but...
Yeah, it should be half, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So as a matter of fact, you could... I'm not sure I recommend this. In fact, the answer to this is going to be half of the end.
Oh.
Because it went uniformly from zero to that.
Oh, okay. So then when it says maintain a constant velocity, that's going to be half. The first one's going to be half of...
No. No, no, no. No. So... what we've got is this segment where this is a graph of velocity versus time, where it's increasing. And for this segment, the question was, what's the average velocity? And it's going to be that. But at the end of this segment, it's going this speed, right? So it's going to maintain that speed, not the average speed.
Okay. So in order to find that, you would just take acceleration times seconds,
yeah,
divided by 2. Or
so that's the average, right?
Okay.
To get the way you talked about...
Oh, and then you'd have to divide again. No. Okay.
So you happily calculated for me what the final speed was.
Yep.
It's going to be the 15 times the 2.
Yep, because I have that one done. Or the figured out.
And then for the second piece, it's going to maintain that velocity for this period of time. And then it's going to decrease its velocity at this rate for this time. So how much is the velocity going to change during this third period?
So now for that, would you just have to subtract them to get the change in velocity? Or is that
them that we're going to subtract?
It would be number 2, or like that.
From
the
what?
Constant velocity minus this?
No.
No.
Because those things have different units. We could never subtract them.
Oh, right, because that's going to be meters per second, and that's meter per second squared.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so then it's going to have to deal with this.
Nope.
So is there... Okay, so then is this...